The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
If you'd like to skip the intro, please refer to the timestamp listed in the episode description. Thank you.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is February 29th, 2024 right now. Peep is actually here, basically on my shoulder. She is vigorously rubbing on my arm. Oh, now she's leaving. She's going to look out her new window in her new house. This is the first, well, like today is the first recording in this house, which I didn't really think about.
Very momentous occasion.
Yes. So, Peep, do you have anything to say?
Peep.
Oh, you gave a little meow. Here, I'll move the microphone closer for you. Peep. Oh, she's leaving. She's not in the mood. All right. So yes, I moved. I'm still in the process of moving. It's been a big pain in the butt. The cliff notes are, I hated it. I still hate it. I never want to do it again. We broke my bed frame, my dresser, so now I also have, like, no furniture in my bedroom. Everyone wants to know about the cats and how they're adjusting. They're doing pretty well. They did better than I expected them to. They were out and about that night. Honestly, the worst part was probably just the car ride. Peep was a nightmare, as she always is, just like when she goes to the vet, screamed the whole time, and peed immediately in her carrier. Fresh Butt was the perfect sweet baby angel, as always. But they're doing pretty good.
That's good. Settled in.
Yeah. If you want to hear more in depth, you can join our Patreon because I talked about it more on there. There's like this crazy windstorm here last night because there was like a cold front coming through or something. And getting used to the noises of like a new place is a lot. But the wind here howls like crazy. It literally sounded like coyotes or wolves or loons just screaming. It was so scary. The cats were horrified, and the chimney flue is stuck open. It's something we have to fix, but the wind just like would shoot down the chimney. Oh my God. And there's this iron thing in front of it to block it off when you're not using it, and it didn't blow over last night, but there was a time that Mike came here and it was like blown over. So I was so scared this huge metal thing was gonna blow over and scare the cats forever. I would never see them again because they'd be feral. And it was just crazy. But and then the power started blinking and I was like, are you kidding me? Like, the power's gonna go out. I don't know where anything is. Everything's still in boxes. Like, obviously you have your phone flashlight, but so I immediately plugged my phone in. I plugged it in just in case, and I went and I scrounged up like one flashlight that I could find. So, but the power didn't go out, thankfully. So
bit of a baptism.
It's been a whirlwind. It really has been. It's been such a whirlwind. I'm still moving stuff out of my apartment in Beacon. I have run up and down so many flights of stairs this week. I should be fit at this point, you would think. It's times like this where I'm like, whew, I wish I was in shape because I am so sick of going up and down these stairs.
I feel like when you do heaps of exercise and your watch captures it, like next week when it's a bit quieter, it'll be like, what are you doing?
Why are you doing insulting anything? Me? Yeah. So, like, your movement is down 800%. But I posted on my Instagram story on my personal account that I did, like, 31 flights of stairs the other day. And people were messaging me being like, oh, my God, go, girl. Hell, yeah. Like, you got this. And I'm like, no. This wasn't by choice. This is not a workout. This was a necessity because I am moving and I hated every second of it. So thank you, but no. Anyways, so what's going on with you? Any car updates? The latest?
So we are now at 7.5 weeks, I think. I'm losing track.
I can't even believe that.
I'm pretty sure it's seven and a half weeks since the car went off the road. Again, I didn't hear anything. I sent out some emails this week. I kind of guessed some email addresses of some high-powered people. You know, look it up and you figure out the email format. And they didn't bounce back. So anyway, I didn't hear back. But then interestingly, I think I sent those Wednesday. Then interestingly, Thursday, I finally get a call from the car company saying that the part they are waiting for will be here in 2 weeks.
And then we don't want the part.
And then I went into the rage phase. Like, so to be fair, the guy I spoke with is in the service department. He's been lovely. He kind of knows the back end situation, but his task is fixing the car. So he goes, look, I know that this isn't the outcome that you want, but I've been asked to tell you. So that was fine. So then I entered the rage phase and I sent an email to the guy I have been dealing with, the other guy who is useless, basically saying, I've just had a call. And as per my many previous communications, we will not be accepting the repaired car. This indicates basically there's a major defect. By the time, even if they fix the car in 2 weeks, that will be 9.5 weeks off the road. And the service guy has been very open with us and he said, I don't know if this is going to fix the issue. So I entered the rage phase, sent this rate. Well, it was still very polite and very professional, but I'm like, basically there's been no communication, which there hasn't, except for them telling us this week about the part. And basically I've tried all appropriate channels till now and I will be looking at other ways. So he wrote back and said basically he's doing his best, which I'm doubtful as to if he is. But
he,
I feel like he's
spell check his emails. Like
how this process has worked is we bought from a dealership. Then the dealership apparently have to deal with the Australian head office, and the Australian head office have to deal with the Asian head office, apparently, is how it works. Like, I get that it's a big process and it's going to take time, but we've just had nothing. So anyway, in this email yesterday, I said basically I'm not waiting any longer. I'll be looking at other options. I don't know what my other options are because I feel like I've done everything I can, but yeah. I said that. Anyway, he's like, I'm doing the best I can. You'll be updated basically as soon as there's an update. And then I haven't told you this morning, he sent me an email. Oh. And he said, he just doesn't even acknowledge me anymore. He just doesn't say hello, good morning. He just writes now. This is the whole email. I have a management meeting on Monday at 11 a.m. about your case. I will be in contact after 1 p.m. I am not at work. Please also let your husband know.
He's going to just start sending you like his daily schedule. Like, today, just so you know, I'm going to the gym and then I'm going to work.
And I just want to reiterate, I have not hounded this guy. I only messaged him yesterday for the first time since we recorded last week after I got the email about the update. I haven't hounded them like maybe once per week, if that. Like, sometimes it's been a few weeks since I've heard from him. I haven't called him. It's all, and I do everything via email now because he went through a stage where he wanted to call me. And I think that is... You
keep
know.
It in writing.
Yeah.
So and everything. I'm a witness. I've seen the emails. I think that they're like so professional and impressive.
And
I'm
feel like
so proud.
Rude. Like, it's just very matter of fact. Like, I'm not rude or abusive or anything. Like, I feel like that wouldn't get me anywhere anyway. But I'm just like, I reiterate the facts. I reiterate the legal obligations of this company. And I'm just like, I'm not putting up with it anymore, basically. I didn't say that, but I think I got my frustration across yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because they keep being like, okay, we're waiting for the part. Oh, the part's coming. And we're like, we don't want the part anymore. We don't
and
want
I'm
the
like,
fixed car.
Yeah. And I don't know if they just thought, and even yesterday when because we had a missed call from the service guy. And even when I saw that, I'm like, you know what, maybe I should just take the car back. But I just feel like it's not going to be, the issue isn't going to be fixed. It might be fixed for a week or two. I just don't want this to keep going on forever. If they could guarantee and said 100% this is what it is, I'd be like, okay, maybe. But the service guy said, I've never, ever seen this issue in the 10 years he's been working at the company. It's not instilling me with the confidence to accept the car back.
No, they just need to cut their very minimal loss and sell it again as a used car or use the parts for another car and just give you a new one.
It's interesting because the car was so new and like Australia's backward and behind and everything. So when the car arrived at the dealership in late December, the dealership had never even seen this car. Like, it was a brand new 2024 model. They didn't even have a demo, like a test drivable car of the model. So I feel like they could use it as the demo, but then I also feel like they'd be worried because what if it does happen again? Or someone who's going to buy the car and it happens to them. So
yeah,
I don't know. Anyway, so Monday, it's now Friday here, Monday. So maybe by next podcast we'll have an update. I don't know. It's just ongoing.
Yeah.
So yeah, fun times. Now into March, this happened January. So who knows?
Are we? No, March is still quarter one. I'm like, quarter one has been terrible. Q1. don't like it. Take it back.
Yeah.
Daylight savings is soon. Maybe that'll be like a change that we need.
And now it is the first day of autumn here today. 1st of March is 1st of autumn.
Oh, nice.
So we made it through summer. Still stinking hot though. But
yeah.
Hopefully, maybe this is the change we all need.
Yeah, daylight savings, change of the seasons. I've got a few more weeks till spring. I think it's like March 21st or something. Hopefully we've done all of our stress and suffering in Q1.
Smooth sailing.
And we'll leave it there because it's our year.
Before we get into the episode, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor, Fume. Have you ever tried to break a bad habit? We know it can be so hard. It sometimes feels like you're trying to climb Mount Everest while wearing flip-flops. We've all been there, but here's a breath of fresh air, Fume. It's not about giving up. It's about switching up. Fume takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. So Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that does just that. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors.
I wasn't really sure what to expect when I got mine, but I was pleasantly surprised. It's really cool. It's just flavored air. And it's almost just like a little treat. The flavors are really good. The mint one is really good. We tried, there's a cranberry one that is really good also. I actually haven't used it for a while because my husband stole it from me and has now claimed it as his. So he brings it around with him. It's fun to mess with as almost like a fidget toy in a way because it's magnetic, so it goes back together. So it's also just fun to mess with in that way.
One of my friends uses Fume, and she, for her, it really helps her to stop, cut down on snacking. She just uses it as a little treat. That's the main reason that she uses her Fume.
Yeah, that's what I really like too, because it's a flavor still, but it's air. When you have like a little boredom craving or anything like that, it is a big help in that way as well.
Start the year off right with a good habit by going to tryfume.com/TCS and get in the journey pack today. Fume is giving listeners of our show 10% off when they use our code TCS to help make starting the good habit that much easier. So start the good habit at tryfume, that's FUM.com/TCS to save 10% off the journey pack today.
So today we're going to be doing a Kids Who Kill episode. There was one crazy, well, the one that made us think to do it is the first one that we're going to talk about is about Mashenka Reed. She was 17 years old and she killed her father and younger brother in Nevada this past month in February. So that is a pretty crazy one. And then we're also going to be talking about Gavin Smith.
He murdered his mother, his stepfather, and his two brothers. I feel like this happened in 2020, and I don't feel like I remember hearing about this case, maybe because it was kind of peak COVID time and there were other things going on, but it is a crazy, crazy case. And it's so crazy. Anytime we do a Kids Who Kill episode, it just happens all the time. There's so many to choose from, which is insane that this just happens so regularly.
Yeah. Okay, so we will start off with Mashenka Reed. Like I said, she's 17 years old from Nevada, and she killed her father and younger brother. And she did also try to kill her baby sister, who is a toddler.
17-year-old girl charged with murder allegedly told police that she waited for her dad to come home from an errand before shooting and killing him and her young autistic brother. This is such a disturbing case we've been covering this week. Kim Burrows has been looking through the latest court documents, which may reveal a motive. She's live here in the studio, and we do want to warn you, the details are very graphic with this story. Kim?
New details coming from a police interview after 17-year-old Mashenka Reed was arrested Friday afternoon. The dad was just identified today as 39-year-old Justin Reed. Meanwhile, in the newest court documents, police say Mashenka looked on the internet to remember how to fire her dad's handgun, something he taught her to do a couple of years earlier. The court documents say Reed asked her dad to go to the store to get some items to make pizza that night on Friday. She allegedly stated that she needed to, quote, stall for time to use the gun. Reno police say that when the dad came home, Reed shot him several times, then shot her 4 or 5-year-old brother twice in the head. Reed told officers that she was responsible for watching her 4 or 5-year-old autistic brother and 2-year-old sister while her dad went to school during the week, and that made her angry when the kids cried and screamed. Court documents say her mother left the family in mid-December and Reed was, quote, extremely depressed. Documents also say that Reed said she locked her 2-year-old sister in a bedroom on Friday for an unknown reason that she couldn't explain to police and later tried to shoot off the lock but couldn't do it, and then ran out of ammunition, she told police.
So, started out, police responded to a home in Stead, Nevada on Friday, February 9th, 2024. They went to a home on Silver Sky Parkway near Silver Desert Way, less than half a mile east of Stead Boulevard at around 4 p.m. on Friday. So at the time, they said that they found two deceased people as well as the shooter in the house and that there was no risk to the public. Our favorite line. The following day, February 10th, police booked Mashenka Reed on adult charges of open murder. So even though she's 17, they are charging her as an adult. And open murder, if you don't know what that is, what is that noise? As we're talking about noises.
Is it outside?
Oh, it's Peep. She's just strolling out of the kitchen. That's one thing. Another thing about Peep, they've just been going crazy exploring this house, getting into mischief. Like, I don't want them in the kitchen. And they're always like, we're going to go in the kitchen. Cats. So open murder, just to segue back. Open murder means that the alleged crime could be first-degree murder, second-degree murder, or manslaughter. So it gives all the options, which I think that's a good thing in a lot of cases, or it'll be better to get a conviction.
Because it's not, like, case,
just one thing.
Especially in this case where it's essentially a minor, an interesting charge.
The victims were found to be Mashenka's father, who's named Justin Reed, and her younger brother. Court documents were released on February 12th, and we found out some new information from that. We learned that police responded to the house after a neighbor reported hearing what sounded like muffled gunshots and someone shouting for help. Before they arrived, dispatch received another call, apparently from Mashenka herself, saying she had shot her father and brother. She apparently told the dispatcher, "I shot my dad." And when the dispatcher tried to ask another question, Mashenka responded by saying, "I shot my brother. My brother's dead." Dispatch asked, "How old are you?" And Mashenka responded, 17. Dispatch asked, "What's your name?" And she responded, "Mashenka Ann Marie Reed." The dispatcher asked the caller to confirm her name, and she said her name again, Mashenka Ann Marie Reed.
A lot of this info comes from the court documents, but I guess that's just to reiterate that, you know, she was not trying to cover up who she was. She was very open
and confident about it.
Yeah.
When they asked her what happened, she reportedly said, "I just couldn't resist the urge to kill somebody." Mashenka was asked by dispatch how old her dad and her brother were, and she stated that her dad was in his high 40s or 50s and that her brother was about 4. They asked her what kind of clothes she was wearing so that officers would be able to identify her, and she said that she was wearing a black turtleneck and blue shorts and that she had glasses. Also just shows that she seems very aware of what's
very
going
coherent,
on. Not insanity, doesn't know what's going on. Officers arrived to find her father dead in the garage. He was shot multiple times. They also located her brother, described as 4 to 5 years old, dead on the living room couch with gunshot wounds to the head. Her little sister was also home, and she was unharmed in a locked bedroom. A handgun was lying where Mashenka had left it. Some more information was released on February 14th, 2024, and according to court documents, Mashenka told police that she grabbed her dad's gun and waited for him to return from the store before allegedly shooting and killing him and her brother.
I've read, too, that she actually asked the dad to go to the store to get something, so she set it up so that she would basically be lying in wait for him when he got home.
Yeah, I guess that she sent him out to get supplies to make pizzas, which is sad. She told investigators that she shot her father as he came through the door before shooting her brother. She then reportedly contemplated killing her younger sister as well. Mashenka told police she had asked her father to go to the store so that she could stall for time so she could remember how to use the gun. Apparently, she looked up some YouTube videos to remember how to use the gun. After relearning how to use the gun, she put her sister in her father's room and locked the door. She then waited approximately 2 arm lengths away from the garage door entry and waited for her father to return. Once he returned home, Mashenka told police that she shot her father 2 to 3 times. She then walked towards her brother, who was laying on the futon in the living room, and she shot him 2 times in the head. She told police she then tried to break into her father's room, which is where her younger sister was, by shooting the door. She told police that she intended to shoot or stab her sister if she had gotten into the room, but I guess thankfully she was unable to. She placed a knife on top of the washer and dryer, which she said she had intended to use to kill her sister. The police report says, so this is coming from like the officer, I asked Mashenka what she was going to do had she gotten into the room. Mashenka had described to me she was either going to shoot her sister or stab her. After realizing she would be unable to get into the room, she told police she had thoughts of stabbing herself, but she said she felt that was too merciful for herself and that she deserved worse. Mashenka told police that she'd been set off when her mother left on December 15th. She told police that her motive was, quote, I guess about my mom running away from us. Mashenka told police that she did not receive an explanation from her mother as to why she ran away, and that her mother never said a word in reference to the reason for her mother apparently just leaving the family. Mashenka admitted to being extremely depressed about her mother leaving, but she also said that they weren't very close and didn't talk that much prior to her mother leaving. She said any conversation would trail off and her mother would start talking about spirits and aliens. I did listen to something today with a psychiatrist talking about this case, and he said that he felt like her mother leaving didn't affect her so much that this is why she committed the murders. Like, yes, it obviously affected her because that is horrible to feel like your mother abandoned you. It seems like there was probably already issues there, but they were speculating that being asked why, she was like, well, I guess that sounds like a good reason why someone would maybe do something like this.
Yeah.
Police also asked Mashenka about her feelings and about how her feelings and experiences had changed since her mother left. Mashenka told police that she began getting thoughts of murder and rape. She said that she would feel kind of hot whenever she saw anyone cry or bleed. She said she felt hot in her face and down there in her genital region. According to court filings, Mashenka's parents divorced in 2016.
I haven't been able to find much more about their relationship, because if they were divorced, did the mother still live with them? Or, like, I have a lot of questions. I haven't even seen, usually it kind of comes out who the others are involved. I haven't seen the brother identified yet, and I haven't seen the mother identified. But it's interesting that they had been divorced for quite a while anyway. So I wonder what the dynamics were.
It seems like Mashenka could also be insinuating that her mother might have some mental illness or maybe like a drug issue, how she was with like, oh, she starts talking about aliens and how she just ran off and disappeared apparently. But again, that's just one side of the story.
Before we get on with the episode, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor, Cerebral. This is your reminder, if you need one, to stay committed to your mental health goals. We're now in March, the year is absolutely flying by, and I know it can be hard sometimes to keep sight of what you really want to achieve for yourself. It's so important to have the right support and advocacy when you're ready to start your mental health journey. Cerebral is here to help you achieve your mental wellness goals with professional therapy and medication management support, 100% online. You'll experience the all-new Cerebral Way, which is an innovative approach to mental wellness designed around you. You'll get a personalized treatment plan from a therapist, prescriber, or both in a safe and judgment-free space.
I know I've talked a lot about how I have always struggled with anxiety. It's basically part of my personality at this point, but it's easier to talk about now because this is something that I have gone to therapy for in the past and I've been on medication for. So I have learned how to live with my anxiety, which is why I am able to speak about it and why I have so much awareness to when I'm struggling with anxiety and what triggers my anxiety. I think that therapy can be a great way to give you the tools to learn how to live your life to its full potential, regardless of what you're struggling with. Whether you're looking for therapy, medication management, or both, Cerebral has you covered. You can connect with highly qualified therapists and medication prescribers, all from the comfort of your own home, which is great. So you don't even need to worry about going out into the world and going to a doctor's office and sitting in a waiting room, which can all seem very overwhelming. This you can all do from your own home.
So to get started on your path towards better mental health, Cerebral is giving our listeners 15% off their first month of online therapy, medication, or both. Get started at Cerebral.com/podcast and use code TCS to make 2024 your best year yet. That's Cerebral, Cerebral.com/podcast and use code TCS. This offer is only available on monthly plans. Other exclusions may apply. See site for details.
Mashenka also told police she would watch YouTube shorts on her phone and that things she would hear would cause her to have thoughts of torturing them. which Mashenka said did not just mean her family, but anybody experiencing pain. She said she would think about how she would torture them, and like them is in quotes. That's what it's like they're their own entity. Including choking them, shooting them, stabbing them, or setting them on fire. Mashenka was responsible for caring for her two siblings, including her special needs brother, during the week while her father attended school. She told police that she would stay home Monday through Friday for about half the day to look after her siblings. That's a lot to put on a 17-year-old as well, basically parentalizing them to take care of a disabled younger sibling.
And
on
even
their own.
I wonder how that worked with her schooling. Like, you know, yeah. She obviously was going to school, but she was only going to school half the time.
Yeah,
that is a lot.
When asked how she felt about her babysitting duties, she allegedly said that she got more and more angry from listening to her brother screaming. Mashenka stated that her brother's screams would cause her to have the hot feelings she described. She also described another instance in which her father was crying in his chair while playing video games. She said that her dad would cry because he missed her mother or because he hated her and himself. She told police that her brother has autism. Mashenka also told police that it had been hard for her to make friends and that she detailed an experience that she had online in January 2024. She's just spilling all this random information.
Like, I'm not, obviously what she was horrendous, but she does sound like a very lonely and isolated person to just be telling the police all of this in like the first or second interview.
Yeah, kind of like desperate to get her story out there. And it seems like, just from what we know from this, obviously we don't know everything, but it seems like she had a lot of turmoil in her family life and home life that was very stressful to deal with. Back to the incident that she was talking about. She told police that she met someone on a dating app while she was using the name Hawkish. She told the person she was communicating with that she was 18 years old and sent nude photographs of herself to the person. She said she ended up stopping communication with the person as she believed it was illegal. So how is that relevant?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's kind of weird to me that she spilled all this because maybe it's just an indicator of the stress that she thought she was under because she thought that what she'd done was illegal by sending nude photos of a minor, I guess, to an older man. But it is just a weird confession to make when you've been basically charged with murdering your dad, your brother.
Yeah, and you're like, by the way, it also might just kind of give us more insight to her social skills.
Yeah.
Mashenka has since also been charged with attempted murder with the use of a deadly weapon. I think that's for the younger sister. And she was due in court in February, but this has been postponed till the end of March now. It's a crazy story, ongoing, obviously. We'll have to see what happens. She's being charged as an adult, which, I mean, she is 17, so like right on the cusp, and it does seem
close
like a
enough,
pretty
yeah.
heinous, premeditated crime. Like, yeah, like she sent her dad out to a pizza. She was relearning how to use the gun. She was looking at these videos. It seems like it had been something that she was thinking about for a while. I don't know. Just situations like this, I'd be interested to hear more about her family life and what actually happened with her mom, because there's always that question with serial killers. Not saying she's a serial killer, but like, are people
productive there, yeah.
born this way or made this way, like nature versus nurture or whatever.
It sounds like she was dealing with a lot of things that a 17-year-old who is at school shouldn't have to deal with, like basically parenting her father, parenting her special needs brothers and brother and sister, dealing with the mother and father's breakup, the mother's abandonment. Like, there was a lot going on. It doesn't excuse what she did, but there was definitely a lot going on.
Yeah, and especially without any help as a kid. Like, she doesn't have the coping skills to deal with all of this. Like, that'd be difficult for someone much older, an adult, to deal with. So it just seems like a lot. Again, obviously not an excuse, but just shows what can happen from a tumultuous home.
Yeah, a very, very sad case.
So we will keep you guys updated on that one when we hear any updates about it. So maybe at the end of March, like we said.
So the second case we are going to discuss is the murders of Gavin Smith's family. Gavin was 16 when he murdered his mother, Risa Mae Saunders, who was 39, his stepfather, Daniel Dale Long, who was 37, and his two brothers, Gage, who was 12, and Jameson, who was 3, in their home near Elkview, West Virginia, on December 9th, 2020.
Gina, Gavin Smith is 18 now, but he was 16 when he shot and killed his mother, stepfather, and two younger brothers who were 12 and 3 years old. It was a trial full of stunning testimony last month, including that Smith was on a video call with his girlfriend during the shootings, who was encouraging him to commit the crimes so they could be together.
There's days that I do anything to take it back.
A brief and emotionless apology from Gavin Smith before asking the judge for leniency.
I'm begging you, if you do grant this alternate sentence Mr. Sullivan's talking about, you won't have an issue on me because I never was involved with it all until December of 2020.
But if it was a break Smith was looking for while facing the possibility of 3 lifetime sentences for first-degree murder, 40 years for second-degree, and another 10 for using a gun to commit the crimes, it wasn't coming today.
You executed your mother and stepfather by shooting them in the head while they were asleep. Then you executed your two brothers by shooting them in the head, the youngest which was hiding under his crib. Your actions can only be described as an act of pure evil. Evil. I find that you have zero remorse for your actions. And in fact, the probation officer reports that he felt that you were justified in your actions.
So just as a little bit of information on the victims. There are all these victims have been identified, which is different to the first case. But Risa was a stay-at-home mom, and they said that she loved baking, she was a loving friend, and her most proud and loved job was being a mother. She enjoyed spending time with her family and caring for her children. They said she could bake a cake like nobody's business and always presented one for a celebration, which was always very much appreciated since they were the best cakes. They said Risa always made the best of any situation. She enjoyed making others smile and hearing the laughter of her children and family. So she married Daniel, who was known as Dan, in 2019. They only met a few years before, but he apparently swept her off her feet, and together they raised 3 young boys. Danny enjoyed swimming, cooking, and being a dad and doing things with his kids. Gage enjoyed playing video games, archery, building forts, castles, and other creations with his Lego blocks. He had a contagious smile and he loved to help others. He enjoyed the outdoors, swimming, and spending time with his brothers, cousins, and friends, and he loved to bake, especially bake cookies. Jameson, who was the little one, enjoyed singing and dancing to silly songs, watching Paw Patrol and building Lego forts with his brother. They said he was an active little boy who loved to make silly faces to make others laugh. He was his pawpaw's little buddy, his pride and joy, and he always wanted to help him. They said Jameson could light up a room with his contagious smile and bright eyes. So they're very sweet little boys, yeah. Especially, sad.
Very cute.
This happened. So Gavin, as we said, he was 16. He had been dating Rebecca Walker at the time of the murders. This was 2020, so peak COVID lockdown time. They met a few weeks before the lockdown, and Gavin's parents didn't approve of her. Rebecca, who was the girlfriend, said, "I know he wasn't allowed to talk to me and he wanted to be around me and spend time with me, but his parents didn't want that to happen." The parents had put padlocks on the doors to the house and also the fridge. Defense attorneys would say that the home was basically a pressure cooker. They said he was basically trapped in the household from a combination of his family rules and COVID shutting down the schools. He wasn't allowed to leave the house. So with the fridge, obviously, that indicates some type of control about letting him eat, and the padlocks on the doors to the house letting him get in and out. It does sound like it was a very extreme parenting situation.
It's giving Ruby Frankie.
Yeah. The whole situation sounds like it was extreme on both sides.
And especially just peak COVID time, even if you had the perfect happy life, COVID time was very stressful and scary when you didn't know what was going on. So many people were dying. So just the environment of the whole world was very stressful and scary at that time too.
Definitely. So Rebecca has said that she tried to get help for Gavin before the murders. She tried to find a counselor for him so that he could talk to someone about what was going on at home. She said, "I was trying to be there for him. I was trying to do what I felt like I needed to do to make sure he had someone. It made me angry that they, as in his parents, felt the way they did about me because I hadn't done anything wrong." Gavin's parents forbid him to contact Rebecca, but he did it anyway. They're in constant contact with the West Virginia Metro News reporting that they exchanged, and I don't know if this is, it says 15,000 pages of Facebook messages. So I don't know if it's 15,000 separate messages or if it's actually 15,000 pages, which is a lot either way, but they were constantly in communication. In December 2020, Rebecca said that her grandmother, which Rebecca had been living with the grandmother at her house, was going out of town, and it gave her and Gavin the opportunity to be together. Rebecca said that Gavin became angry when he was picked up by the sheriff's office after multiple attempts to run away. Gavin had spoken to Rebecca about wanting to kill his family, and she said that she did also agree to him that this was a way they could be together. On December 9th, 2020, Gavin and Rebecca had a video call. Gavin showed her then that he had a gun and a knife. She said he was planning to kill his mum and his stepdad. However, I can't exactly recall what he used with every single victim, but I do know there was a gun and a knife involved. The prosecutor asked Rebecca, "Did you see a gun on camera?" And she said, "Yes." Then she was asked who had the gun in their hand. And Rebecca said, "Gavin did." And the prosecutor asked, "Did he also have a knife?" And Rebecca said, "Yes," as he was planning to kill his mum and his stepdad. Rebecca was asked if she encouraged Gavin to commit the murders. She said, "Yes, I did. I was on the video chat with him. I didn't tell him, but I was texting him on the video chat. I told him to hurry up and do it." Rebecca goes on to kind of clarify. She said, "I do want to say that I was not at his house at this time. I was on the video chat with him as it was occurring, but I did encourage him to hurry up and please do it. I said, please hurry up and do it. Get it over with. That's all I can remember."
Does she get in trouble too?
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
Okay.
So the defense attorney, John Sullivan, asked her, "Did you want him to shoot his family?" And she said, "Unfortunately, yes, I did." The attorney, Sullivan, asked her, "Why did you want him to do that?" And she said, "Because I felt if he did it, it would give me and him the opportunity to be together." At some point during the call, the screen went black. Rebecca said, "I couldn't see what he was doing because the screen was pitch black. When he came back on, he seemed very panicked, nervous, and scared. I was trying to calm him down and telling him he was going to be okay." So Gavin killed his parents and Gage before returning to the video call. After hearing Jameson crying in the background, Gavin then killed him. Gavin sent some messages about the murders to Rebecca. One message said, "Okay, baby, I'm a murderer." Another one said, "I killed Jameson, I'm crying."
This reminds me of Gypsy Rose.
So,
and Nicholas,
"Okay, baby, I'm a murderer," yeah.
It's literally something that they would have said.
Yeah. After the murders, Gavin fled to Rebecca's grandmother's house where he hid, and he was arrested after relatives found the bodies of his family 4 days after they died. Gavin was charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder. He was also charged with use of a firearm in the commission of a felony. Rebecca was accused of letting Gavin hide at her grandmother's house and later pleaded guilty to 4 counts of being an accessory after the fact of first-degree murder. She was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Rebecca was eligible for parole in June 2023, but according to the media, nothing seemed to happen with that. Her expected release date was December 15th, 2025. Which is weird because that's only 5 years or even less, but maybe she gets, anyway. In January 2023, Gavin was found guilty of the murders of his family. He was given 3 life sentences for the murders. The judge sentenced him to 40 years in prison, plus another 10 years for the use of a firearm. However, because Gavin committed the murders while he was 16, the life sentences were handed with mercy, meaning that he can apply for a pardon after he becomes eligible for parole, which is 15 years after he started serving his sentence. The mandate can be applied retroactively to fit the defendant's age when the crimes occurred. So despite this now him being over 18 and he was tried as an adult, when it actually went to trial, they can still kind of impose the with mercy sentence. Gavin will automatically appear before the parole board in 15 years after his conviction because of the law. Judge Kenneth Ballard said he only granted mercy because it was mandated by the Lord, and he called the murders an act of pure evil. The judge said, "This was a heinous crime. You murdered your entire family in cold blood, Mr. Smith. You devised this plan to kill your family days and weeks in advance for the selfish reason of spending time with your girlfriend. You executed your mother and your stepfather by shooting them in the head while they were asleep. Then you executed your two brothers by shooting them in the head while the youngest was hiding under his crib." Mm-hmm. At his sentencing, Gavin did say that he had some regrets. He said, "I do regret this, and if I could, I would take it back because it's one of my deepest regrets." So it's just wild, like, that this can actually happen to a family by a 16-year-old kid, because he basically didn't like the parenting. Obviously, it sounds like it was a very extreme parenting style with the padlocks and all that on the fridge, but just a crazy case to kill the entire family. Very reminds me of the Broken Arrow murders too a little bit.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I feel like a lot of times with cases that involve kids like this, especially killing their families or really killing anyone. People, kids in their or teens, they don't realize the gravity of the situation. They don't realize like the gravity of killing their family or killing people. I know it sounds silly because you're like, what do you mean they don't understand? But I just think a lot of times it seems almost impulsive or very emotional, like he's wrapped up with this girl, and kind of similar to, like I was saying, Gypsy Rose, like they just get wrapped up in these emotions and get so like they lose sight of reality. And I don't think they, especially if you haven't experienced death before, I've never really had to think about someone dying and just not existing anymore, I could see how they don't think that far ahead.
Like, I'd love to know what his plan was. You know, was he just going to hide at the grandma's house forever? How were they actually going to be together? Like, they didn't attempt to flee, which I know that Gypsy and Nicholas did, but it's like they didn't attempt to do anything except,
like, there was
Gavin
no plan.
Hide at the grandmother's house until someone came and found him days later.
Yeah, and just even thinking on a smaller, more average scale, if you think back to when you were a teenager and some small drama happened, at the time it felt like literally your entire life was ruined if there was drama, or everything just felt so much more important than it really was, like looking back as an adult. So I just feel like kids obviously don't have the emotional maturity to realize like this small incident of your parents not liking your girlfriend, or even if your parents are shitty in a sense with like the food locks, that they just don't get that this is just like a small part of their life, and it's not worth throwing away your entire life as well.
Just no rational thinking.
Yeah, like they just don't understand, I think, and it's just a lot of emotions, impulses.
Definitely.
I've definitely heard interviews of kids who have been in jail, and they like grow up, and once they're older, they do say things like that, where they didn't really realize like what it all meant, that like their parents are really going to be gone.
Even with Gypsy, I know in our episode, she's like, if I could do anything, I'd bring her back. You know, obviously when people get punished, I know obviously there's a consequence of their actions and it might change the how they feel about it. But yeah, I feel like a lot of child perpetrators of these type of murders do end up regretting it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that they're like, oh, my parents are going to be gone, I could do whatever I want, they suck. They just don't think about what erasing a life really means.
Yeah, and what the outcome will be, the actual consequences.
Yeah, I get. And just to say, because like, we always have to be clear, not saying that's an excuse or anything. Obviously, there's many teens and kids out here not murdering their families, but just as a way for us to think, like, how could someone do this? I feel like that is what happens a lot of the time.
So I did find some interesting stats on this type of crime. When a parent is murdered by a child, it's known as parricide. Parricide account for 2% of all homicides. Perpetrators are typically white, middle-class males without a history of prior criminal convictions. And this is different to the ones
that
we've
spoken about. That's interesting.
Yeah. This part is different for our two cases today. But most parricides involve single victim and single offender situations. So obviously we had multiple victims in today's ones. But I feel like usually it's just where one person kills one parent for whatever reason. Firearms are more likely to be used against fathers than mothers. I did find some interesting Australian stats too. I feel like it's probably a little bit different in Australia because we obviously have less gun usage, but I did find it interesting. One parent is killed by their child every month in Australia, which comes from the Australian Institute of Criminology. There was a May 2015 report by that institute, and it found that parents were the third most frequent group of victims of family homicides behind partners and children. Between 2002 and 2012, there were 134 parents murdered by their children. 10 incidents of those resulted in the deaths of both parents. By comparison, during the same period, 654 people were murdered by their partner and 238 children were killed by their parents or parent. And there were 40 victims of sibling homicide between 2022 and 2012. The majority of murdered parents, 88%, were killed in the home, and most cases happened between 6 p.m. and midnight. 4 were killed in someone else's home, another 4 were killed in a health or mental care facility. Sons were the most likely to murder a parent, with 80% of the offenders being male, and in 73% of cases in Australia, which isn't surprising to me, the victims were stabbed to death. So it's interesting. I feel like most of the cases that I can remember, obviously Gypsy's one and Mashenka is another female one, but I absolutely feel like the majority of times we hear about this, it is a male perpetrator.
Yep, Broken Arrow.
Yeah. There's another one which we might comment, might cover in a future episode that happened recently in Florida, where I think he was 13 and he killed his mother after she'd just finished breastfeeding his baby sister. Like, it was, there's footage of her sitting on the couch feeding the baby, and then he comes and I think he stabbed her though. But yeah, it's interesting stats anyway to think about.
I think it's also very easy, especially in the world today, for kids to be like radicalized in some way, either online with toxic, I always lose track of what I'm saying.
Well, even, I know what you're trying to say, even with Mashenka, she figured out how to use the gun because she watched it on YouTube. Like, there's, the kids have much more information available to them these days about how to carry out these types of crimes.
Yeah, like, there's just access to anything, and especially on the internet, there's really no filter. They can find anything. You can find, I guess what I was trying to say is, like, toxic almost. Like, an example, incel behavior, people who hate women for just literally no reason, but they're very, very confident in their reasoning. So I think kids and teens can be very impressionable to that because they never feel like they really belong anywhere, or, you know, you don't like your parents as a kid. So then you find some niche community that you fit in with and is accepting of you, but they're not always the best people. So that's why I think it's also important to just, like, be aware of what your kids are doing online and who they're interacting with, because there's just so many shitty people in the world and social media makes it so easy to share every shitty opinion. All right, so that is it for this episode. Gonna wrap it up pretty quickly because we're having, like, a technical issue. So that's it for this episode. I'm, like, lost now. All the usual stuff, everything will be on the blog if you want to find out more about these cases at truecrimesocietyblog.com. Follow us on Instagram. We'll post any updates with Mashenka's case and all the other cases going on in the world. We post there a lot. True Crime Society, if you want to follow our personal accounts, mine is StephSum_, Olivia's TCS Olivia, if you want to see what we're up to. And we're on Patreon, so if you want some more content from us, check us out on Patreon. Like I said, we talked a little bit more about my move on Patreon. Olivia talked a bit more about the Eras concert that she finally got to go to. So if you'd like to hear more about that stuff, check us out on Patreon. And that's it. Leave us reviews, nice comments. And Olivia mentioned she heard someone say this on another podcast. If you like the podcast, leave us a nice review, nice comment. If you don't like the podcast, don't do anything.
That's so true. Like, if you don't like it, move on. It was nice chatting with you for a bit, but you can just move on.
Unless a podcast is truly, like, problematic, saying awful, crazy things, people who leave bad reviews on podcasts are insane.
Imagine how many we're gonna get now. They're like, how dare you, I can leave whatever review I want.
Well, I don't read them anymore because everyone hurts my feelings. No, I'm just kidding, but yeah, please just don't. And that's it. Thank you guys for listening. Stay safe out there. Peace out.
See ya.